Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 478, titled The Bush Administration, the Underground Reich, and the Peak Oil Controversy. This is being recorded on September 26th of the year 2004. Before getting into the main body of the broadcast, remember, Spitfire, website www.spitfireliz.com, stocks all of the CDs, all of the lectures, all of the programs I've done over the years. You can visit their website, again, at www.spitfireliz.com and access detailed article-length descriptions of each For the Record program. There are also a number of other features, including links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU that have the whole For the Record series available online. www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery has more recent For the Record programs streaming on Real Audio. There is a longer URL linked to both that address and to the Spitfire website with older programs available for download only. Spitfire website also has a search function, a link to a website which has reproductions of all of the U.S. government documents proving the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry, something that we're going to touch on in this program, and also has the book Martin Bormann, Nazi and Exile, available for download for free. Let me stress, too, that those of you who do not use the written descriptions for the Record programs and only listen to the program on radio or the audio online are missing a large and valuable resource, because the information is there. If people find the program somewhat confusing or overly pedantic, which I can understand, please take advantage of the descriptions, and there's often information in the descriptions that I did not have time to include in the original broadcast. Now, For the Record 478, and all of the material in this broadcast was researched for us by the same heroic listener who not only researched the material in For the Record 477, but also For the Record 469 and 476 as well. This program, For the Record 478, is dedicated to the late Walt Shaysby, a Green Party activist in Los Angeles, who was the author of the paper that's going to comprise the vast bulk of this program. And again, research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. Walter Shaysby, a Green Party activist, had this paper called The Coming Panic Over the End of Oil, Coming to a Ballot Box Near You. This was posted online at December 24th, 2003. It's by Walt Contreras Shaysby, and the full URL will be available on the description for the Record 478. Now, this deals with the peak oil controversy, maintaining that is a line of argument / investigation that maintains that from this point forward, fossil fuels will be diminishing in availability, and that will produce an economic and political crisis. The entire peak oil controversy is far more complex than it's been made out to be. The handwriting has been on the wall for a long time vis-a-vis fossil fuels, and certainly readily accessible petroleum reserves are growing more and more scarce. The rapid growth of the Chinese economy is creating a price crisis because of the greater demand for fossil fuels. And again, it's been on the writing has been on the wall for a long time that the world's petroleum reserves, at least natural petroleum reserves, are diminishing. Nonetheless, though, I think that the peak oil controversy is something of a red herring in two respects. A, it's also been the writing is on the wall that if we don't get the hell away from fossil fuels, we are doomed as a species and our planet may be doomed as an ecosystem. And beyond that, as discussed in, among other things, Miscellaneous Archive Show M11, the For the Record shows about the CDU funding scandal, and For the Record 385, one of the most important cartel agreements in history was the Standard IG agreement of 1929, in which Standard Oil of New Jersey and IG Farben, the Nazi chemical cartel, or German chemical cartel, later Nazi chemical cartel, worked out an agreement vis-a-vis the hydrogenation process, in which oil can be synthesized from coal. That I've talked about the Standard IG agreement at considerable length. Time permitting, we'll touch on it again near the end of the program, but again, the annotations are important. It had been possible since the early 20s to synthesize oil using the hydrogenation process. The vast bulk of the oil that was used by Nazi Germany to fuel their enormous war machine, a whole lot of trucks, a whole lot of tanks, a whole lot of planes, came from synthetic oil developed under the hydrogenation process. It was not at that time economically competitive with naturally derived oil, simply because of the fact the Nazis used slave labor, they were able to utilize it. But in the more than 50 years since the end of World War II, it defies belief that improvements have not been made in hydrogenation, which could permit oil to be synthesized from hydrogenation much more simply, much more cheaply and competitively with naturally derived oil. So those are two of the things to consider. But nonetheless, there is a growing pressure on a dwindling amount of readily accessible natural reserves. One of the interesting things about the peak oil controversy, however, is that many of its most enthusiastic advocates are not only connected with the fossil fuels industry, but in particular have links to the Bush administration, and as we will see, one of the most important organizations in disseminating information and propagandizing about peak oil is a derivative of the Thyssen-Bornemisza economic nexus, and that is inextricably linked with the Third Reich, the Bormann Group, and with the Bush family, and we're going to talk about that. One of the ways in which these interests, meaning the Bush administration and the Thyssen-Bornemisza interests, have been spinning the peak oil situation is that this means we've just got to pull out all the jams and drill the living bejesus out of everything and everybody, ruin the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, drill offshore, do this and that, and, full speed ahead and damn the environment, so to speak. And we're going to take a look now at the peak oil controversy and the way in which many of the high rollers in the fossil fuels industry and the Bush administration have been utilizing this controversy. Again, the coming panic over the end of oil coming to a ballot box near you, December 4th, 2003, by Walt Contreras Shaysby. It reads as follows. Psst, hey there. You believe that we're facing a crisis, an imminent peak of world oil production, right? Well, the insiders in the president's energy strategy team would like you to join with them in solving this sudden new crisis. In fact, you may already have been inducted. You panic at the idea of Western civilization collapsing as the engines and machines grind to a halt. Uh-huh. You agree with Ron Swenson of Ecosystems that the world is about to experience a real energy crisis, likely to be a calamity unparalleled in human history, unquote, Swenson, 1996. You think, as oil geologist Colin J. Campbell says, that the very future of our subspecies, hydrocarbon man, is at stake, right? You agree with Virginia Abernathy that there are too many immigrants using up our resources, I'm sure. You probably realize, as many do not, that the era of cheap oil and gas is over. As Matthew E. Simmons, the CEO of the energy investment bankers of Simmons & Company International, recently said, quote, I think basically that now, that peaking of oil will never be accurately predicted until after the fact. But the event will occur, and my analysis is leaning me more by the month, the worry that peaking is at hand, not years away. If it turns out I'm wrong, then I'm wrong. But if I'm right, the unforeseen consequences are devastating, unquote. Well, guess what? Simmons, again, Matthew E. Simmons, is not only an oilionaire himself, but he has been a key advisor to the Bush administration and to Vice President Cheney's 2001 Energy Task Force, as well as sitting on the Council of Foreign Relations. Simmons is a board member of Kerr-McGee Corporation, a major oil and gas producer. He insists that the U.S. government is very worried about oil depletion. However, Cheney's secretive National Energy Policy Development Group refused to make its records of closed-door meetings with industry executives public. The industry has taken a beating in public opinion since the Kyoto summit put the spotlight on global warming. And now, Simmons apparently wants to make the public's fear of the end of cheap oil the drumbeat of the 2004 re-elect Bush and Cheney campaign, although a more enlightened energy policy, he worries, quote, is going to take a while, unquote. I happen to believe that peak oil must be an accurate model of the facts, and I don't believe this article disputes those facts. But it does draw some interesting connections. Caveat emptor. On July 3, 2003, the same day that the World Meteorological Organization warned that global warming was creating an unprecedented pattern of extreme weather, Congress was considering a bill that would create a controversial new national energy policy, cited from The Independent, 2003. The bill allows new oil exploration all along the outer continental shelf using invasive technologies that will damage sea life and ocean habitat in environmentally sensitive areas. In addition, The bill would open our public lands to further destructive drilling and mining operations. 2 years ago, President Bush demanded that Congress pass an energy policy centered around more drilling for oil and gas in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, but that red flag has been dropped from the new energy bill S-14, the Energy Policy Act of 2003. Given the immediate concern with natural gas supplies, little strategic planning is likely to come out of Congress this July, so attention is focused on reviving the ideas of 2001 in 2004 to have a mandate for change in the second term. Simmons said last year that, quote, the 2001 plan devoted almost as many pages to the need to increase alternative energy sources like wind and fuel cells as it did for the need to protect the supply of oil and gas. It called for a giant amount of new power plants. The plan for America to begin addressing the need for a return to more nuclear energy and clean coal. None of these new energy sources, wind and fuel cells, etc., can grow fast enough to be a real alternative to oil or natural gas, even by 2020. These days, Simmons is getting a lot of help from folks all over the political spectrum, from some of the global moguls themselves, like Schlumberger and Halliburton, to the environmentalist light Republicans of REP America, to some of the anarcho-primitivists and Luddites who admire Ted Kaczynski, and from plenty middle-of-the-road enviros in between. On May 27, 2003, Simmons addressed the Second International Conference of ASPO, the Association for the Study of Peak Oil and Gas, which was meeting at the French Petroleum Institute via satellite teleconference video link from his Houston offices. His remarks were transcribed by Michael Rupert, the ex-cop who challenged the CIA for its role in the drug trade. Since 9/11/01, according to his webpage, www.copvcia.com, Rupert has pioneered the effort to educate the world about the consequences of peak oil, the fact that the world is running out of energy, and what this might mean for human civilization. Simmons gained a powerful ally this spring when the Paris-based International Energy Agency of the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development reported for the first time that the peak of world oil production is in sight. Spencer Abraham, the U.S. Energy Secretary, called an emergency meeting of the National Petroleum Council's Natural Gas Summit on June 26, 2003, amid calls for the admission to deal urgently with the acute shortage of natural gas this year. Quote, it's a national concern that will touch virtually every American, Abraham told the summit of experts and industry executives. It is our hope that the energy bill will contain provisions that help spur domestic production of natural gas and enhance our importation facilities to boost supplies while reducing our nation's growing over-reliance on this one source of energy, unquote. Daniel Yergin, author of the 1991 book about the oil industry, The Prize, and founder of Cambridge Energy Research Associates, counseled that the fault was not with markets. Quote, rather, it is the result of disappointing geological experience over the last few years, plus restrictions on exploration, combined with a shift to new uses of gas that will certainly grow consumption. Spurring domestic production of gas will also subsidize oil drilling, and diversifying sources will entail more use of coal, so this energy bill does not quite entail the immediate end of hydrocarbon man. Without a doubt, despite the talk of alternative fuels, the use of government to stimulate the exploration and discovery of new oil and gas fields is at the top of the agenda. Note this, because this is one of the key points that Chasby is making. Without a doubt, despite the talk of alternative fuels, the use of government to stimulate the exploration and discovery of new oil and gas fields is at the top of the agenda. Simmons believes that the reason oil reserves have fallen so far behind oil and gas consumption is that, quote, we drill for less wells. We also stop doing most genuine exploration, unquote. Higher oil prices are essential since, quote, the higher the cost, the more you can extend recovering more and more of the harder and harder to get resources, unquote. Simmons funds the remaining wildcatters, handling an investment portfolio of approximately $56 billion, so he should know. In fact, the coalition that is pushing for a radical new energy policy is largely composed of those who stand to benefit from a revival, not a phase-out, of oil and gas development. Last sentence again, because it's critical. In fact, the coalition that is pushing for a radical new energy policy is largely composed of those who stand to benefit from a revival, not a phase-out, of oil and gas development. The intellectual and activist core of the coalition is made up of those veteran oil geologists and engineers who use the method of modeling the ratio of reserves to production developed by the maverick research geophysicist Marion King Hubert, who died in 1989. He believed that the peak of production is reached when half of the estimated ultimately recoverable resource, determined by what has been recovered and logged cumulatively as actual reserves, has been pumped. In 1956, at the Shell Oil Lab in Houston, Hubert startled his colleagues by predicting that the fossil fuel era would be over very quickly. He correctly predicted that U.S. oil production would peak in the early 1970s. In the 1970s, Hubert embraced solar power, saying, "I'm convinced we have the technology to handle it right now. We could make the transition in a matter of decades if we begin now." Although his thinking was definitely in the ecotopian tradition, he has often been mistaken for a cynical dystopian by those who swear by Hubert as the prophet of the great Malthusian die-off. The dean of the ultra-Hubertians is Kenneth DeFays, professor emeritus at Princeton and author of Hubert's Peak, The Impending World Oil Shortage. DeFays, who worked with Hubert in Houston for Shell Oil, says, "I never came to identify with management," unquote. Convinced of Hubert's theory, "I realized that a contracting oil industry was not a good career prospect," he says, again quoting, "so I decided to get out and go into academia." Besides, he thinks that crude oil is much too valuable to be burned as a fuel, unquote. Support for a remedial program of oil exploration and development versus switching to research and development of alternative energy sources tends to be found among oil experts who are consultants to the industry. While accepting some of the values of the New Age, they largely remain loyal to their calling as oil geologists and wildcatters. The leading trio of Jean H. Leherrer, Colin J. Campbell, and L.F. Buzz Ivanhoe have worked for or with the leading firm modeling oil fields, Petroconsultants of Geneva. Note this, Petroconsultants of Geneva, because this and the firm that grew out of a merger appears to be the intellectual and to a certain, certainly the intellectual and propagandistic advocates of peak oil as a justification for basically reaming out the earth. And Petroconsultants and the derivative IHS group are owned by Thyssen-Bornemisza. They're part of a Nazi-linked industrial complex of which the Bush family was a significant part. So pay attention to Petroconsultants here. Once more, the leading trio of Jean H. Leherrer, Colin J. Campbell, and L.F. Buzz Ivanhoe have worked for or with the leading firm modeling oil fields, Petroconsultants of Geneva. Since the 1950s, they have been fed data on oil exploration and production by just about all the major oil companies, as well as by a network of about 2,000 oil industry consultants around the world. They use this data to produce reports on various matters pertinent to the oil industry, which they sell back to the industry. Quote, this much is known. Kenneth DeFays writes, quote, "The loudest warnings about the predicted peak of world oil production came from Petroconsultants." Now, about Petroconsultants and how this is part of the Thyssen-Bornemisza group with links both to the Bormann group, the Underground Reich, and the Bush family. In a late 1998 merger, Petroconsultants became IHS Energy Group, a subsidiary of Information Handling Services Group, or IHS Group, a diversified conglomerate owned by Holland America Investment Corporation, IHS Group's immediate parent company for the Thyssen-Bornemisza Group, TBG, Incorporated. In the 1920s, George Herbert Walker and his son-in-law, Prescott Bush, had helped the Thyssen dynasty finance its acquisitions through Union Banking Corporation and Holland America Corporation. Until his death last year, Hans Heinrich Thyssen-Bornemisza, the nephew of the Nazi steel and coal magnate, was one of the world's richest men. Some of the old Hubertians would probably flinch at such an association. In 1995, a report by Campbell and Leherrer on World Oil Resources, World Oil Supply, 1930-2050, Petroconsultants Party Limited, 1995, written for oil industry insiders and priced at $32,000 per copy, concluded that world oil production and supply would probably peak as soon as the year 2000 and decline to half the peak level by 2025. Large and permanent increases in oil prices were predicted after the year 2000. Alternatives to fossil fuels got a mixed review from the petroleum consultants gathered at the ASPO meeting in Paris, May 26 and 7, 2003, who maintained that hydrogen, solar, wind, and other alternative energy sources will not be able to fill the looming demand-supply gap that faces the planet. Colin J. Campbell, skipping down, by the way, Colin J. Campbell, the leader of the Neo-Hubertians, is a petroleum geologist from Ballydehob, Ireland, and author of The Coming Oil Crisis. He worked for Texaco as an exploration geologist and then at Aramco as chief geologist for Ecuador. He is a trustee of the Oil Depletion Analysis Center and the founder of the Association for the Study of Peak Oil and Gas, originally a network of 24 oil scientists. ASPO has associate members like Hal Burton and financial sponsors like Schlumberger, but Campbell is critical of the Bush-Cheney administration for, quote, collectively having personal investments of as much as $150 million in oil companies, unquote. Campbell has laid out his prescription for various consumer governments. For example, quote, Germany should resist green pressure to give up nuclear power at precisely the moment it needs more energy as oil peaks and declines. Germany has coal and possibilities for coal bed methane. This industry needs to be rediscovered. It may become economic again. Germany should encourage its motor manufacturers to move to more efficient engines and hydrogen fuels, especially those made by solar means. It should provide whatever fiscal incentives are needed, unquote. Jean H. Laherrère is a petroleum consultant residing in Paris, France. Laherrère's early work on seismic refraction surveys contributed to the discovery of Africa's largest oil field. He retired in 1992 after 37 years with Total CFI and its subsidiaries in exploration activities in the Sahara, Australia, Canada, and Paris. Since retiring from Total, Laherrère has consulted worldwide on oil and gas potential and production as a petroconsultants associate, and he serves on boards of the Society of Petroleum Engineers and World Petroleum Congress. And the paper here goes on to document the backgrounds of many of the individuals who have been advocates of the peak oil situation. And they are people who are petroleum industry professionals and consultants or investors. And again, it should be noted here that Walter Shaysby is not disputing the basic facts about petroleum itself, but he's noting a very important political phenomenon, namely that the declining readily available natural petroleum reserves, quote, peak oil, unquote, is being used as a rationale by not only this administration, but also elements such as the petroconsultants slash IHS slash Thyssen-Bornemisza slash Underground Reich elements to not only justify further raping of the environment, but also looming in the background are some truly draconian Malthusian limitations on human society, and with the kind of Nazi heritage that the Thyssen-Bornemisza interests have, well, one can guess how they will respond to tightening resources, burgeoning population. They've done that in the past. The key element of this particular presentation, the leading trio of Jean H. Laherrère, Colin J. Campbell, and L.F. Buzz Ivanhoe have worked for or with the leading firm modeling oil fields, Petroconsultants of Geneva. And skipping down, in a late 1998 merger, Petroconsultants became IHS Energy Group, a subsidiary of Information Handling Services Group, a diversified conglomerate owned by Holland America Investment Corporation, IHS Group's immediate parent company for the Thyssen-Bornemisza Group, TBG, Incorporated. And that, of course, Thyssen-Bornemisza is the parent company of ThyssenKrupp, the largest heavy industrial firm in Western Europe. And it is that Thyssen-Harriman-Wall Street business axis that forms the epicenter of the Bush family's links to various Nazi companies. And as can be gleaned from, among other sources, the website linked to the Spitfire website, Prescott Bush's involvement with this milieu continued in the post-war period when these institutions were trafficking Nazi money abroad. We're in the last couple of minutes here after reading the obituary for the author of the paper that I just read, Walter Shaysby. We're going to just chat ever so briefly about the Standard IG Agreement of 1929, the hydrogenation process, and the CDU funding scandal in which basically the old Leuna synthetic fuel plant built by IG Farben and the largest of the Third Reich synthetic fuel plants was the focal point of a complex deal in the early 90s in which politicians from the CDU, the largest German conservative political party, were bribed. And this involved complex machinations between ELF Aquitaine, a French oil company, the ThyssenKrupp firm, and also Saudi Arabia. And at the epicenter of that was the Leuna facility. That was the largest synthetic fuel plant built by the Nazis in World War II. Its bombing, the so-called Battle of Leuna, was one of the principal elements of the air war in Western Europe. It was rebuilt and put back into action by the Soviets and was still a focal point of powerful political and economic activity in the 1990s. Now, the author of that paper that I just read was Walter Shaysby. Walter Shaysby died under less than optimum circumstances this past, just about a month ago. From the ABC News website, Dateline Los Angeles, August 24th, 2003, health officials confirm West Nile death. Health officials confirmed today that a 62-year-old Claremont man died due to complications from West Nile virus, making him the fourth Los Angeles County resident to perish from the mosquito-borne disease. The Green Party activist Walter Shaysby died Thursday at a Fontana hospital of encephalitis, or swelling of the brain. Meanwhile, the Board of Supervisors took a step today aimed at enabling county crews to enter private property when there is a threat that potential West Nile virus-carrying mosquitoes could be breeding there. So Walter Shaysby died just this past August, of West Nile fever. By the way, there have been a number of investigations implicating West Nile fever in possible biological warfare activity. It was known that Saddam Hussein had been stockpiling that for biological warfare purposes. And in the recently published book Lab 257, there's discussion of the Plum Island Animal Disease Laboratory, closely connected, by the way, with the U.S. Military Biological Warfare Program, and the possibilities that West Nile may have gotten off of Plum Island. Now, again, the Standard IG Agreement of 1929 was a cartel agreement between Standard Oil of New Jersey and IG Farben. Basically, Standard made IG the second largest stockholder in Standard Oil, a key capital acquisition for IG Farben, which enabled it to keep going. And in exchange for that, Standard Oil had the rights to synthetically manufactured oil all around the world except for Germany, where IG retained the rights. Synthetic oil under the hydrogenation process powered the German war machine in World War II. Most of their oil came from synthetic oil, and the primary facility that they used, the Leuna facility, was the focal point of the very complex CDU funding scandal that involved the Thyssen firm, again, a parent of Petro consultant, or linked to Petro consultants, ELF Aquitaine in France, and also Saudi Arabia. Again, as noted in For the Record 385, it is extremely unlikely that this technology, hydrogenation, that was the focal point of one of the most important cartel agreements in the world in 1929, and which fueled the German war machine in World War II, has not undergone sufficient revision to be potentially economically useful. But again, if we don't get away from fossil fuels, we're dead. So, again, in evaluating the peak oil controversy, just remember some of the people who were spinning it, some of the interests who were spinning it, and some of the things those spinners have done in the past. Again, Spitfire website, descriptions of the programs, links to other sites, links to the WFMU websites featuring the For the Record series on Real Audio, Martin Bormann Nazi in Exile, which will place the Thyssen interests in the Bormann Capital Organization and the Underground Reich, a link to a website that has documents, declassified U.S. documents documenting the Bush family's links to the Thyssen complex and other Nazi-linked industries, including post-war links. So do take advantage of that. That concludes For the Record program number 478, the Bush administration, the Underground Reich, and the peak oil controversy. My name's Dave Emery. This has been recorded on September 26th, 2004. Thanks for listening.